to the book of 1 Timothy, chapter 4. 1 Timothy, chapter 4, we'll read verses 7 through verse 9. 1 Timothy 4, verses 7 through verse 9. But refuse profane and old wives' fables, and exercise thyself rather unto godliness. For bodily exercise profiteth little, but godliness is profitable unto all things, having promise of the life that now is and of that which is to come. This is a faithful saying, and worthy of all acceptation or acceptance. First and Second Timothy, of course, are letters from Paul to Timothy. In Acts 20 and verse 1, we see that Paul departed from Ephesus to go to Macedonia. In Acts chapter 20, we see Paul's farewell address to the Ephesian elders. And at that time, he entrusted the work at Ephesus, the church work at Ephesus, he entrusted that to Timothy. We see that from 1 Timothy chapter 1 in verse 3. He says, as I besought thee to abide still at Ephesus when I went into Macedonia, again that takes us back to Acts 20 verse 1, that thou mightst charge some that they teach no other doctrine. So Paul has entrusted the work of the church of Ephesus to Timothy. He is pastoring that church. And Paul writes these two letters to Timothy knowing that Timothy was facing a heavy burden of responsibility at the church there. And as you read it from 1 Timothy 1 through 1 Timothy chapter 4, it becomes very, very obvious that false teachers were in the church. In fact, Paul warned them of that in Acts chapter 20. And they were spreading their poisonous teachings. And not only that, but it's obvious that some of the members of the church of Ephesus had been captivated by false doctrine. So Paul writes to Timothy to instruct him, to encourage him to stay the course, that even though he was in the midst of error, even though he was in the midst of those who were departing from the faith, and there were problems in the church of Ephesus, and it was really a very difficult and trying time, Paul just basically instructs Timothy to stay the course. In verse 12 of 1 Timothy chapter 4, Paul says to Timothy, let no man despise or think lightly of thy youth. So Timothy was a young man and probably one of the youngest in the church. He says, but be thou an example. That is, be a pattern, so that a pattern that they can imitate. Be thou an example of the believers. Be thou an example in word or in speech. Be thou an example in conversation, which is outward conduct, outward deportment. Be an example in charity, love. Be an example in spirit, speaks of an attitude, in faith, and in purity. So Paul in verse 12 is addressing outward conduct. And Timothy was to be an example of outward conduct. Now the foundation of that responsibility, the foundation of what is stated in verse 12, is found in the instruction of verse 7. Refuse profane and old wives' fables, and exercise thyself rather unto godliness. Exercise thyself unto godliness. As we saw last Sunday evening, godliness is an inward trait. Godliness is something that is inward. And it is the foundation of what Paul writes here in verse 12. So this godliness is imperative to fulfilling our outward responsibility. He then states in verse 8 what should be incentive to follow the instruction of verse 7. And what is stated in verse 7 and 8, Paul says in verse 9, is a faithful saying. That is, what he's saying is constant. It is true. It is something that you can rely upon. It is a faithful saying worthy. That is, it is worthy to be accepted, worthy to be believed, worthy to be received, worthy to have confidence in what he stated there in verse 7. I want to speak tonight on the subject of the worthwhile pursuit of godliness, taking our thought mostly from verse 7, but and exercise thyself rather unto godliness. The subject of the instruction is godliness. And it is absolutely necessary to the outward testimony that Paul is speaking of in verse 12. In other words, verse 7 is the starting point of verse 12. In this instruction in verse 7, exercise thyself rather unto godliness. In that instruction, you will see as you read on in verse 8, you see again that word godliness. So twice in the instruction, godliness is mentioned. Godliness is the subject. Godliness is the concern of the instruction that Paul is giving. Godliness is the objective that Paul is laying out. Godliness is the aim. Godliness is the intent of the instruction. It is what is, again, absolutely necessary to doing that which is outward. It is absolutely indispensable. And it is mandatory to what is said in verse 12. If he is going to be an example in verse 12, he must exercise himself unto godliness. Therefore, this instruction concerning godliness is not something that is unimportant. It is something that is very, very, very important. It is not something that's optional. This is not something that you can do without and have a good testimony. Godliness is an obligation. That brings us, of course, to the question, what is godliness? What is godliness? Now, you in the Bible, you see the word godliness, you see the word godly. Godly is referring more to the outward. But godliness, again, is referring to the inward. Godliness is our character. It is taking on God's character. It is God-likeness. It is imitating God. Godliness is a state of the heart being in devotion to God. It is the impression of God upon our hearts. It is the workmanship of God inside of us. It is the expression of God in the heart. Godliness speaks of an attitude. It speaks of an attitude of reverence. It speaks of an attitude of respect and devotion toward God. Godliness is a consciousness of God. It is not only a consciousness of God, it is a delight in God. It's taking pleasure in God. It's taking pleasure in what God does. It's taking pleasure in God's disposal. It's the attitude of the soul that proceeds from a perpetual recognition of God. Godliness is a perpetual recognition of God in our lives. It is a perpetual realization of the presence of God. It is a practical awareness of God in every aspect of our lives. Godliness is an attitude centered upon God. Godliness is our hearts being occupied with God Himself. It is a right response to God. Godliness always responds to God correctly. It's an attitude of humility. It's an attitude of lowliness. It's an attitude of affection toward God. It's an attitude of dependence toward God. It's an attitude of submission toward God, an attitude of gratitude toward God, and obedience to God. So this godliness really is the best definition of godliness is Jesus Christ. Godliness is Jesus Christ. It is Jesus Christ in us. Jesus Christ, of course, is the model of godliness. We read in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 16, and without controversy, great is the mystery of godliness. And then he goes on to describe the mystery, so it's no longer a mystery once it's told. And the mystery is this: God was manifest in the flesh. Talking about Jesus Christ. But that's godliness. Godliness is a manifestation of God. It is Jesus Christ within. So this godliness is real. It is not something that we imagine. It is real. It is not only real, it is God manifest in the flesh. That speaks of the fact that it is very, very intense. It is very, very powerful. God manifest in the flesh. That's powerful. Godliness is powerful. Godliness is fervent. God manifest in the flesh. That speaks of that which is energetic. It speaks of God energy. That's godliness. Godliness is very extensive. It spreads into the entire soul. It's not just something that affects a small part of our lives. When a person possesses godliness, it's something that spreads throughout their entire soul. It has an effect upon their understanding. It has an effect upon their reasoning. It has an effect upon their will. It has an effect upon their affections. And it has an effect upon the life. Godliness encompasses everything about us. It defines our priorities. You know why people's priorities are wrong? It's because they're not godly. Godliness defines your priorities. The problem really isn't priorities. The problem is a lack of godliness. Because if we're godly, our priorities will be right. Godliness encompasses our priorities. It encompasses, again, everything. It encompasses our relationships. A godly person builds relationships around God. Around God. Why is it that some folks are attracted to the ungodly? It's because they're ungodly. Godliness builds relationships around God. It encompasses our jobs. Godliness. The truth is, there's certain jobs that a godly person just can't do. It encompasses our families. It encompasses our finances. It encompasses our recreation. It's an inward thing. And it defines our life. So godliness is not just about a few hours on Sunday. Godliness is 24/7 proof that Jesus is transforming our lives. You cannot serve God without godliness. You can go through the motions, but you cannot truly serve God without this godliness. Notice the value of godliness in verse 8. It says in verse 8 that godliness is profitable. Notice in 1 Timothy 6 and verse 6, godliness with contentment. Contentment also is inward. Godliness with contentment is great gain. So godliness is profitable. Godliness is great gain. Notice it does not say that godliness is a way of profit or a way of gain. It says godliness is profitable. That is, godliness itself is profitable. It's not that godliness is a way of gain or a way to obtain gain. Godliness is gain. That means that since godliness is profitable, since godliness is gain, that makes it valuable. That makes it useful. That makes it beneficial to the one who possesses it. That means it's rewarding. It's to our advantage. It's profitable. If something is profitable and if something is gain, that means also that it's helpful. Godliness will never hurt you. Godliness will only help you. Godliness is helpful. Godliness, when I think of the word gain, I think of fruitful. Godliness is very fruitful. Godliness is effectual. Not only profitable in gain, but again in 1 Timothy 6 and verse 6, we read that it is of great gain. That is, it is of considerable gain. It is significant and substantial gain. Now notice that the profit and gain of this godliness is extensive. Again, in verse 8 of 1 Timothy 4, godliness is profitable. Godliness is, that's present tense. It's not godliness shall be. It's not godliness was. It is godliness is, present tense. No matter what else is going on, godliness is profitable unto all things. Godliness is not just profitable in some things. Godliness is profitable in all things. And it is of great gain in every circumstance. Godliness is profitable. In every circumstance, godliness is of great gain. In every situation that you and I may find ourselves in, godliness is profitable. And godliness is of great gain. It is profitable and of great gain in every human obligation. Whatever our obligations entail, godliness is profitable. Godliness is of great gain. Whatever our responsibilities entail, godliness in all of our responsibilities is profitable. And it is of great gain. You cannot say that of anything else in all the world. That cannot be said of wealth. Wealth is not profitable in every circumstance. Bill Gates wasn't profitable when it came time to die. Wealth is not profitable in every circumstance or every situation. Wealth is not gain. Material accumulation. This cannot be said of material accumulation. It cannot be said that material accumulation is profitable unto all things. Can't be said. It's not true. But it can be said of godliness. Be careful when you encourage someone to take a good paying job at the expense of the spiritual. Because, folks, a good paying job is not profitable in all things. But godliness is. And that's what we need to promote. That's what we need to stress is godliness. Not personal accomplishments. Personal accomplishments are not profitable unto all things. People have accomplished great things. But it didn't prove to be profitable in all things. But this can truly be said of godliness. You see, you can accumulate wealth. You can accumulate the material. You can accomplish great things and still lose out. But you never lose with godliness. Never. You never lose by having some godly convictions. You don't lose by that. Oh, I'll lose my job, or I'll lose this, or I'll lose that. You haven't lost anything. Because whatever you think you've lost, godliness is profitable. Godliness is of great gain. You will not lose by being godly. You will not come out on the short end by being godly. You will not miss out by being godly. Godliness is profitable. Again, we're talking about something that's inward. Godliness is profitable unto all things. Do you believe that? Answer that question, each one of you. Do you believe that? Do you really believe that godliness is profitable unto all things? If we really believe that, then there's no conflict. We don't even have to think about it when there's a so-called conflict between material and spiritual. Because we know that godliness is profitable unto all things. Well, I'll just do this for 5 years, and then after the 5 years is up, I'll have all this time for church. Don't you realize that after the 5 years is up, you've already spiritually ruined, and you won't even want time for church? I've heard that all my ministry. Oh, I'll be more faithful when I retire. No, you won't. Because it's a matter of godliness. It's a matter of godliness. It's not a matter of timing. It's not a matter of situations. It is a matter of godliness. And godliness is profitable unto all things. Do you believe that? Are you persuaded and convinced that godliness is profitable unto all things? Notice what it says. Godliness is profitable unto all things, having, present tense, now possessing the promises of the life that now is. That's right now. And of that which is to come. People will say all the time, well, my reward is in heaven. That's true. But that sounds like you have the idea that you're missing something here on earth, but you're going to get repaid in heaven. That's a bad implication. Godliness has the promise of the life that now is. Godliness is profitable right now. Right now. Godliness is of great gain right now. Because you know what godliness does? Again, godliness is inward. Godliness prepares me for everything that can happen. Godliness prepares us. Godliness prepares us for every stage of life. Middle life, old age. It prepares us for our own death. Godliness. Whatever can happen to us, and it's a lot of things, godliness prepares us for it. That can't be said of money. That can't be said of material accumulation. That can't be said of personal accomplishments. It can only be said of godliness. Godliness is profitable unto all things, having the promise of the life that now is and of that which is to come. Godliness has present value, and godliness has eternal value. That can't be said of wealth. Wealth has no eternal value. That cannot be said of accumulation of material things. It cannot be said of personal accomplishments. You see, godliness enhances the value of our lives. It's profitable unto all things. Do you believe that? Do you believe that godliness enhances the value of our lives? Are you persuaded of that? Are you convinced of that? Is there any doubt in your mind of the value of godliness? Godliness is possible. It's not something for heaven only, but it has the promise of the life that now is. Godliness is possible. Notice in 2 Peter chapter 1. 2 Peter chapter 1 in verse 3. According as his divine power hath given unto us all things that pertain unto life and godliness. God has already given us all things that pertain unto life and godliness. In other words, God has given us everything that we need to have this godliness. Everything we need for godliness in this life, we already have. You don't have to wait to get to heaven. You already have everything you need for godliness. We are called to live lives of godliness. Not by spurts, but continually. And we have everything we need to do so. We are called to live lives of godliness under all circumstances and in all seasons. And we have everything we need to do so. We are called to live lives of godliness in the midst of a wicked and sinful world. And we have everything that we need to do so. So godliness is of great value. Godliness is for now. Godliness is possible. How do we attain godliness? Again, we're talking to the saved. The unsaved doesn't apply. We're told here that there must be a pursuit of godliness. First of all, in order to pursue, you have to believe that godliness is profitable, that it is of great gain. You are not going to pursue something that you know is a loss. You only pursue that which you believe is profitable, which you believe is of great gain. So why is it that people, God's people, pursue worldly things over spiritual things? Because no matter what they say, they believe there's more profit in material things than spiritual things. Their pursuit says that so. We are to pursue godliness. That means we must believe that godliness is of great gain. This is a faithful saying. Godliness is profitable. It's profitable. Now, this pursuit is expressed in two ways. In verse 7, exercise. That speaks of something that is rigorous. That speaks of something that is strenuous. Something that is self-sacrificing. It speaks of training. In other words, you don't just wake up with godliness. It is something, and you just do not wish it to be so. Godliness requires exercise. This godliness in 1 Timothy 6 and verse 11, we're told to follow after it. And the word follow, again, conveys the idea of an earnest pursuit, a striving toward. So these two expressions, exercise, follow after, are indicative of several things. I want to mention five briefly. Speaks of a goal. To exercise speaks of a goal. The goal and the object of the exercise is stated in verse 7. Exercise thyself unto, godliness. The goal, the object, that which we are to pursue after is godliness. This godliness that's profitable in all things. This godliness that sinks deep into our soul and has a power over our entire being and has a power over our understanding and our reasoning and our will and our affections and our very lives is to be pursued. It is to be our object. It is to be our goal. Godliness. I've got to have godliness. It is so valuable. I have to have it. It is not only valuable, it is available. And it is possible. Exercise thyself unto godliness. Speaks of, secondly, it speaks of a responsibility, a personal responsibility. It says, exercise thyself. This is not something that anyone can do for you. It's not something that your spouse can do for you. It's not something that your parents can do for you. It's not something that your pastor can do for you. It's not something that your friends can do for you. It's not something that your church can do for you. It is something that you must take personal responsibility for. You cannot exercise for another person. Will not do them any good. This is personal responsibility. Exercise thyself. If we want more godliness in our life, you must engage in a lifestyle of spiritual training. You must begin immediately spiritual training. And as in all training, it's not something that you can do every now and then when you feel like it. It's all the time. Day after day. You exercise yourself in spiritual training. You exercise your heart in spiritual training. You exercise your mind in spiritual training. Today, people think, well, I'll just come to church, a pastor will preach, and that's my exercise. And that's why people are in such pitiful spiritual shape today. That's like me sitting down in front of the TV and eating a bag of potato chips and watching an exercise program. Doesn't do me any good. But that's what a lot of people think. Well, I'll just come sit in the pew, and preacher, you just exercise for me. Doesn't work that way. There's personal responsibility. It also speaks of personal desire. Exercise thyself rather unto godliness. And then in verse 8 he says, for bodily exercise. In bodily exercise, if physical fitness is not a priority, you will not put yourself through the work of training. Physical fitness has to be a priority if you are going to exercise physically. Is that not also true spiritually? Spiritual fitness must be a priority if we are going to engage in spiritual exercise. Spiritual exercise includes many things. Reading, studying the Word of God, meditating the Word of God, praying, feeding our own soul. Not being spoon-fed everything. Feeding our own soul. In bodily exercise, if we're not dissatisfied where we are physically, we will not be motivated to put ourselves through the training. So there has to be some degree of dissatisfaction. We look at ourselves in the mirror and say, wow, how did I get to look like that? And you become dissatisfied. And you become so dissatisfied that you do something about it. That's true spiritually. There aren't too many people today that are dissatisfied with the spiritual condition. But we have to be so dissatisfied that we engage in training. That we engage in spiritual training. Again, if there is not enough desire for the goal, you will not put yourself through the training. And that's why it all comes back to godliness is profitable in all things. Do you believe that? Do you believe that? Because if you do, that is incentive to exercise on the godliness. Do we believe that godliness is so powerful, that it is so valuable, so extensive, so available, and so possible, that we are willing to exercise ourselves unto godliness. Fourthly, exercise requires focus. Consistent and persistent exercise in following after, pursuing after something. That thing we're pursuing becomes our focus. Folks, it's not the focus of many, godliness. There aren't a whole lot of people today giving attention to godliness. How focused are we upon godliness? How easily distracted we are from the pursuit of godliness. Fifthly, this personal exercise requires dedication and commitment. A dedication and commitment to being godly, to possessing godliness. Also, we see that if we're going to exercise ourselves unto godliness, we need to make a sensible value judgment. We have to judge between some things. Notice in verse 7, exercise thyself rather. That word rather speaks of a preference. We prefer exercising ourselves to godliness to something else. Now, anytime you make a preference, you have made a value judgment in your mind. You have decided in your mind what is more valuable to you. And when people choose the material, when people choose the world over the spiritual, they are making a value judgment. They are saying this physical activity or whatever it is more important to me right now than the spiritual. Now, they'll use a lot of things to justify it, and we could go into that, but we're not going to. But my point is simply this: there is a judgment made concerning value. Now, the word rather here in verse 7 is used in connection with that which is profane, and old wives' fables. Now, the profane simply refers to that which isn't spiritual. Anything that is not spiritual is profane. It refers to that which is not sacred. It refers to that which is not biblical. It refers to the secular rather than the spiritual. It says here that we are to refuse that which is profane. And we are to refuse old wives' fables, which simply refers to myths. It's really a euphemism for stupid nonsense, is what it really means. Old wives' fables, just referring to stupid nonsense. It's amazing how much stupid nonsense God's people have fallen for. It's amazing how much stupid nonsense God's people bring into their lives and prefer it over the spiritual. Prefer it over godliness. So in order to attain godliness, godliness must be preferred over and above that which is secular. It's absolutely sickening and appalling when God's people make fun of somebody who has some conviction, makes fun of somebody who puts the spiritual ahead of the material and talks about it. That's appalling.
truth is, those people are in a minority today. That is, those who exercise themselves unto godliness. This preference displays itself in a refusal. You want godliness in your life? There's some things you're going to have to refuse. The word refuse means to decline, to turn down, to reject. There's going to be many times in your life where you have to choose between the secular and the spiritual. And you know what's sad? Many, instead of refusing the profane and the old wives' fables, they refuse the godliness. They decline it. They turn it down. They reject it. Oh, they will tell you that in the future, the secular is to be refused in preference to that which is spiritual. This is profitable. This is profitable. You may have tickets to a sporting event or 100 other things. You say, well, I know it's Sunday. The Lord understands. No, He doesn't. He understands that you're sinful. He understands that you're ungodly. He also understands that you've refused the spiritual in preference to the material. Well, I only do it a couple times a year. Once is too many. One time is too many. One time to choose that which is carnal over that which is spiritual, that's foolish. One time. One time. Refuse the profane and old wives' fables, and exercise thyself rather unto godliness. Our level, we said that verse 7 is really the foundation of verse 12. The truth, what I'm saying is, if we have godliness, we will be a pattern. We will be an example of the believers. We'll be an example in speech. We'll be an example in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. You know, if I did mission work years and years ago, if I were to do mission work again, there's some folks that have been saved a long time that I wouldn't want anywhere near a new work. I wouldn't want them anywhere near those who've been newly saved, because it'd be a bad example. When they choose the secular over the spiritual. You know, I get tired of apologizing for church members, for God's people. That's sad that we have to apologize for God's people. We find ourselves in that situation many times. But our level and degree of godliness determines our spiritual health. Therefore, we're to exercise ourselves unto godliness. Just like with physical fitness, there are things that happen in our lives that manifest that we're not physically fit. If for some reason tonight I was required to run a mile, you know what I would discover tonight? I would discover that I'm not physically fit. And I might even say, you know, there was a time I could run a mile. But tonight I'm not physically fit enough to run a mile. But that's really not What's
important? Not that there's no importance to physical fitness, but that's not really the important thing. Things also happen in our lives that manifest, man, I'm not where I ought to be spiritually. I'm just not where I ought to be. I'm not what I ought to be. And you know, if it's manifest to you tonight, if you're required to run a mile and all of a sudden you find out you can't run from here to the door, you say, well, I'm disgusted with myself. Starting tomorrow, I'm going to exercise. Oh, that were true spiritually. When it's manifested to us that we're not in spiritual shape, we'd say, man, I'm going to do something about that. Starting right now, I'm going to exercise spiritually. But again, with physical, if we're not fit physically, does that not subject us to disease? Does not that subject us to some danger? Does that not subject us to some difficulties? I mean, there's people that can't walk from here to the third pew because they weigh too much. It brings all kinds of difficulties in their lives. It makes their whole life more difficult. Is that not true spiritually? When we are spiritually out of shape, are we not subject to spiritual disease? Are we not subject to spiritual danger? And do we not make our lives more difficult? Spiritual exercise is very important. But you know what else? If we're not physically fit, and we're just drawing a comparison here, this isn't a message about physical fitness. I'd be the last one to preach on that, that's for sure. But physical fitness, if we're not physically fit, it takes away our desire and our energy. And if you're not physically fit, there are people who are so unfit physically that they don't even have the desire to walk to the mailbox. They do not have that desire. Nor do they have the energy. That's true spiritually. To be spiritually unfit, there's a great drop-off in spiritual desire. There's a great drop-off in spiritual energy. So Paul says to Timothy, exercise thyself rather unto godliness. And if we do that, we'll spare ourselves a lot of trouble. But we may also spare others as well. Because verse 16, and we'll close, says, take heed unto thyself and unto the doctrine. Continue in them. For in doing this, thou shalt both save thyself and them that hear thee. Our spiritual fitness can have an effect upon others as well. Oh, to be spiritually fit. The older we get, the more limited we are physically. There are things that I could exercise from here for the next 10 years every day. And there are just things physically I pass those days. Those days are gone. So as we get older, we become very limited physically. But as we get older, it ought to be just the opposite spiritually. Spiritually, tonight, we ought to be stronger than we've ever been. Come tomorrow, we ought to be stronger than we were today. Continually getting stronger and stronger. Continually getting wiser and wiser. Spiritually fit. Oh, for a whole church full of people who are spiritually fit. Spiritually fit. I'd rather have a church full with everybody having to take that elevator and be spiritually fit than everybody being able to run up and down the stairs and not having any spiritual maturity whatsoever. We need to be spiritually fit. We need to exercise ourselves. The goal? Godliness. God manifesting Himself from within. I ask you tonight to examine your own spiritual fitness. You know, physically we can... I'm unfit, but I can go stand next to somebody who's worse off than I am physically and say, I'm not so bad after all. People do that spiritually also. It's not the way to measure fitness. Don't compare yourself to anyone else other than Jesus Christ. And when we compare ourselves to Jesus Christ, oh, how short we come. And how that ought to give us incentive to exercise, to be more and more conformed to Jesus Christ. Take time. We preach this all the time. We'll continue to do so. Make no apologies. Take time to read God's Word. Take time to study God's Word. Take time to pray. You say, well, I don't have time. You're too busy. You need to refuse some things in your life where you can exercise yourself on the godliness. Brother Larry, if you'd come.